Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms and restrictions apply.
Hey everybody, and welcome back to another episode of The Athletic Hockey Show's Prospect Series. I'm Max Boltman, back alongside Corey Pronman, and today we're going to talk a little bit about, well, first of all, Corey's mock draft and how it's been influenced by some of the young players playing at the 2022 Men's World Championships. There's a few draft eligibles at that tournament. We're also going to talk about the Calder race, and then we're going to take your questions. So it should be a really fun episode. Corey, how you doing?
I'm doing very well. How about you, Max? I think this is a unique setting for you for this podcast.
Yes, I am overlooking the San Juan Condado Lagoon, so I'm on technically on vacation. But
is that where the Red Wings are practicing right now?
Yeah, something like that. I think you never know. I mean, the Red Wings have been out long enough. I may see one or two of them walking around down here while I'm here. But nope, just sneaking in a little getaway here and doing the pod remotely. So after this, we're gonna hit the city. So we'll start with the mock draft here. I don't think any of these guys are popping around San Juan, but your mock draft, I think, had some really good differentiation from the staff mock that we did a few days ago. And I know people probably saw the two and were like, I thought The Athletic just had a mock, but I think this one...
I got a few texts saying that.
Did you really? Yeah, I mean, I figured, but there is some good differentiation. The top five stays the same in terms of the player pool, but you got the order flipped on the two right D, and I wanted to start right there. If you're the Seattle Kraken, and we do think it's likely that they're going to have this choice between Simon Nemitz and David Juracek, what are the factors that you think go into that? How are they parse these two young right shot D?
Right. And I think talking around the league, it's really 50-50. I talked to some people who think Nemitz is clearly better. I talked to some people who think Juracek is clearly better. Nemitz has more offense. He's a smarter player. He's a better skater. There's just more pure offensive talent there than with Juracek. Not substantially more, but there's more. Whereas Juracek is a 6'3 defenseman, yet Nemitz is about 6'0. He's really physical. He's got a better shot. You probably can argue, if you're a Juracek fan, there's more pro projection there. You think he's going to be a better pro. You look at, I think Sider's way high for this guy, but you look at how Sider's played in the NHL this year, you're like, yeah, okay, I think he can be that kind of impact for us one day. Just that big 6'3 right shot defenseman who brings offense and is very hard to play against. With the difference between him and Sider being the skating, I think. So I think those are the variables that people are going to be debating. I think Nemec is going to be potentially a first power play guy in the NHL.
Let me do the thing that I always kick myself for doing, which is throwing out a comparable option to you live on air that I haven't vetted for you and then inevitably getting it slammed down. Do you see any Ryan Pulock in Juracek's game? I mean, I think especially when I think of the big shot.
Yep.
But you know, he's not the most mobile guy. You still think good two-way and I think fueled by the shot.
Yeah, I think he's bigger. He's bigger than Pulock.
Right.
Both aren't great skaters, but big shots. I think he plays harder and he's bigger. So I think Pietrangelo is the one that comes to mind when I think of him. I think he's got a chance to be a really good top pair defenseman in the NHL. Not saying he will, and he hasn't really played a big role at the Worlds for Czechia. Mind because they're a better team than Slovakia is, than Austria is with the draft eligible. So he's not going to get a big role there. Where you have NHL defensemen like Filip Hronek on that team, but he still looks like a guy who belongs here, and I think he's going to be a very good pro for a long time.
We'll move on from Seattle in a second here, but the thing that intrigues me with Seattle making this pick is that's a team that's invested a lot in their analytics department, and I'm sure they have modeling for these guys and these pro leagues over there. But there's not really a precedent, especially for what Nemec has done in Slovakia. The closest thing might be Brant Clark last year.
Brant Clark is the one I think of. And Brant Clark is a pure offense type of defenseman. This is not the guy who the Kings drafted thinking he's going to be our tough minutes, our PK guy. This is the guy they envisioned running their first power play unit. And he generated significantly more offense in that league than Brant Clark did.
Which makes it interesting. I mean, especially when you think about the possibility that, I mean, the likelihood that Nemec is going to be able to take on tougher minutes. If he's doing that and outproducing a guy who made it into the top 10 just on his offense a year ago.
Yeah. Clark is bigger, but Nemec is a better skater.
Yeah. So that was the first thing that jumped out to me. You've also got Cutter Gauthier, and I don't think that one's too big a surprise for anyone who listened to us break down the staff mock last week. I mean, we talked about Gauthier as a guy who's risen in NHL circles, and I think putting him to Columbus makes a lot of sense, actually, because they have that ability to take someone who doesn't have to necessarily be a center. They have a couple guys who can play center right now, and Gauthier is another who can play center, but they're getting potentially a forward who complements a Kent Johnson, I think, quite well at this pick.
Right. I think you kind of feel comfortable that Cole Sillinger is going to be a top two line center of the future, and you can bring Gauthier in with Kent Johnson, and you're probably like 50-50 on both of them on whether one of them is going to be a top two line center, and you get both of them in, and you can experiment, see does Johnson work in the middle and Gauthier on the wing, can Gauthier work in the center in the middle and Johnson on the wing, and I think that could be a possible experiment for them, and even if it's not, I think he's just an excellent player and he deserves to be slotted in that range regardless.
We'll skip over Ottawa. I think it's the same Joachim Kemmel you have going to the Sens. But with Detroit's pick, you've got a guy who – this dovetails really well into what we're going to talk about with the Worlds. Marco Kasper, who's a guy who I think came on really well at the end of the year in the SHL. Now he's playing for Austria at Worlds right now and playing, as I understand it, pretty well, Corey.
He's playing well. He's playing a big role on it. It's not a good team at the world level, but it's a – still, it's the senior team. He's among the go-to players on that team. I'm not going to sit here and tell you he's popped and he's doing what Slavkovsky's doing with Slovakia or what guys like Laine did when he was at this tournament, but he looks like he belongs. He's playing against in that game versus Czechia, which had NHL players. He played 19 minutes and didn't look overwhelmed, which for a U18 player, a guy wearing a cage at this tournament, it's highly impressive. I think you like how he competes. I think you like the pace he brings. I don't know if the offense in his game is ever going to blow you away, but I think it's good enough to go with the skating and the compete. That he's got good hands, good vision, he can shoot it. I think you like the overall package really well.
It's that direct style, right? He spends a lot of time around the net. He's not afraid to be around the crease and taking hits or giving hits behind the net that sometimes can set up those chances. And then the other day, he did make that play. I think this was in the game against the Americans. Yeah. Pretty nice play behind the net, a pass to set up a goal, you know, kind of going passing back the other way as he circled behind the net.
Yeah, no, he's a good player. I think he's a really well-rounded player. And I think he's a guy you can watch, you can envision. Is he going to be a star NHL player? Probably not. But he's got a chance, I think, to be a second-line center in the NHL. And it's not easy to find those kinds of players. And I was having some conversations with some scouts about this the other day about how the, like, after you get out of that top five range, how the next 10 picks can go. I think you're talking about a lot of small wingers at that point. You're talking about Joachim Kemmel. You're talking about Jonathan Lekkerimäki. Matthew Savoy is a listed center, but he's probably a winger in the NHL. So I think at some point, teams are going to start talking themselves into this guy just because we think he can play the middle. And he provides a little bit more of an NHL style of play than some of those other players.
And I think just personally covering the Red Wings, I think you have the fit for what they tend to like there too. So I think that one made a lot of sense. And then we get into kind of the other difference I really saw, which was you kind of corrected for what I thought we messed up a little bit on our staff mock, which is you did elevate some of those D into that tier at the start of the 10s. You got Anaheim going with Kevin Korchinski. Minchikov going to Columbus at 12. I think those were kind of the two main risers you had among the D. Specifically to the Anaheim one, though, I wanted to talk about because they are, to me, in an interesting situation. You don't often, I think, have teams. I guess New Jersey might be another example of this, where the boxes that they already have seemingly checked are the centers, right? Like you look at Anaheim and they have Zegras and McTavish, and you figure for the next however long, those are their two guys down the middle. To me, if there's anyone who can take a shot on a justified shot on one of these small skilled wingers, it's kind of Anaheim, isn't it? Like if they wanted to go for a Lekarimaki or even potentially a Yurov, it might be a little high given the circumstances. They're a team that makes a lot of sense. Savoy's not there for them in this mock, but
I think that's a reasonable argument. They've drafted, you know, Jacob Perreault and some other guys with, you know, that are skill wingers, but nobody that high who you're talking about as a true foundational player going forward. So I can definitely see Lekarimaki or Kamel being in the mix. I just put Korchinski to 10 because I'm hearing from people around the league that he's starting to trend in that top 12, top 10 range. That people, you just because he's played really well in these playoffs, one of the younger defensemen in the draft. He's like a June, July 04, 6'2, mobile, has a lot of offense. Seattle just came back against Portland the other a couple days ago and won that series, and he was a big part of that and why they've gone so far. And just overall, I'm hearing a lot of hype for him. And I'm not sure it's a perfect fit in Anaheim because they do have some really good young defensemen coming up, but they could always use another one. Their defensive core isn't so well built out, especially after they traded Hampus Lindholm and Josh Manson. They could always use more.
And we know, I mean, this is Pat Verbeek's first draft at Anaheim. You know, he spent a lot of time on those Yzerman staffs in Detroit and Tampa. They did gravitate toward the big mobile D. And I wouldn't say that's necessarily the way that Anaheim's D is currently built. I would say when you look at like your Drysdales and your Fowlers, you know, they did just trade for Drew Helison in the Manson deal, but Korchinski, I think, maybe more aligns with some of the Tampa and Detroit drafting philosophies.
Yep, that makes sense. I think his defense isn't amazing, but he is big and mobile, and there's a lot of pro potential in his game.
Connor Geeky going to the Islanders, and I think you said it in the write up. Where he lands is going to be one of the most interesting things to follow in this draft. Can you tack me through your kind of process of how you placed him for this exercise?
It's difficult because I think Savoy versus Geeky is not an agreed thing on in the league. Not that they're directly compared against each other. They just happen to be because they play on the same CHL team. But there isn't a lot of agreement on where Geeky in particular is going to go. There are still some people who are big believers in this guy. I think he's going for sure a top 10 pick, potential top 2 line center in the NHL, premium type of prospect. And there's some others who are not as convinced. They see the heavy feet. They see some games he's involved, some games he's not as involved, and they're not as high on him. They wouldn't want him with a top 10, top 12 pick. Maybe a little bit later they would be passionate about him, but not in that top range. So like, I can buy that I put him too low. I could even buy that he might even go a little couple picks later than where I have him listed. I think there's a really big variance of opinions on him right now in the industry.
One of the ones that jumped out to me right away was at number 18, you've got Dallas taking Rucker McGroarty. And McGroarty, obviously a player who's really talented, really smart, really good reviews on the intangibles there. The question is always the feet. And when I saw you had him to Dallas, my first thought was, well, I guess that kind of makes sense. Dallas already kind of did this dance a little bit once with Jason Robertson.
They did in the second round, mind you. And I think he's a better skater than Robertson was at the same age. Robertson like was just his really awkward skater when he was younger. McGroarty's skating, I would argue, has gotten better over time, actually, and looks NHL caliber. Not like good NHL caliber, but you can tolerate it in the NHL level. To go with all the excellent things he does, which is the skate, which is the skill, it's the compete, it's the scoring ability. And I do think he'll go somewhere in that 15 to 25 range.
Leon Bischel is a guy we've talked about kind of as a player who maybe hasn't gotten quite enough attention in this run-up process. I think we've talked about him a couple times. But when you have a young defenseman playing in the SHL, there it's two things, right? Number one, it's a pretty big vote of confidence in them from their coaching staff that they're able to do that. And number two, it's a tough situation for them to be in. Obviously, it's that's a hard league to be in as a 20, 21-year-old, let alone an 18-year-old. You've got him at 20 to the Capitals. Where is this kind of the top of his range, right around where you expect him to go? How do you see that?
I think it's right around where I expect him to go. I think there are some big believers, some people who see him more as a late first, early second, but I think that's kind of the meat of the projections where I think he'll go, just because he's 6'5". Not a great skater, but a good skater for the size. Plays hard. First pass offense. I think people will see that package. And if you're a believer, you're thinking, oh, this is Eric Chernak. This is a guy who will be top four, play hard minutes, important part of your lineup. If you're not a big believer in how he's going to transition pucks, you're thinking maybe he's a third pair defenseman. But I think somewhere in the second half of the first round, he's going.
25 was another one that really jumped out, and that's the Tampa Bay Lightning pick. You've got him with Ivan Miroshenko, and obviously his having Hodgkin's lymphoma and his being in Russia right now, like all complicating factors to this. But can you talk me through how you kind of ended up placing him? I think it makes a lot of sense, the fit with Tampa, given that they haven't had a first-round pick in a while. They can really afford to take a big upside run here at one of the players who on talent fits well above where this slot is.
Right. As I talked about on the last episode and in the last ranking article I did, there's been some somewhat positive progress with Miroshenko's medicals of late. I mean, he's still not out of the woods yet by any means, but when I've talked to his representatives and talked to people around the league, they seem a little bit more optimistic that, you know, that he'll make it through this and that he could even play next season, hopefully. A lot of we'll sees still. Got to take it week by week, month by month. But there's much more of an appetite, I think, within the league to take him with a late first, with an early mid-second, than there was about a month or so ago. Why I think Tampa, there's a couple of teams like Tampa or Pittsburgh that I think make the most sense for him, in that as contenders with limited windows, obviously Pittsburgh more than Tampa, but even, you know, whether it's Tampa, Washington, or Pittsburgh, who haven't had a lot of high picks, whose cores are going to get older and eventually not be as impactful at some point, you could see the rationale that you want to maximize the window. And if you get a guy who, you know, if things go well, you can envision 3-4 years being a top nine, top six forward in your lineup, you know, making a difference. That's because we thought he was a top five talent before the cancer. I can see those kind of organizations talking themselves into that.
Yeah, I think it makes a lot of sense. We can just go in order here at this point because there's a few picks here. The Yurgarden kids, Oslin and Ogren, go 26 and 27. This, I think, was one of the more interesting parts of the mock because we're in territory that we didn't do as a staff at this point. And so really the first look at where these guys are slotted, I guess you had your draft rankings, but post those World U18 tournament where both of these two, I think, helped themselves at that tournament.
Yeah, I think you see those two. You have the Lynn Kolping center, Philip Bystedt, in there too, who was the second line center for Sweden. So you see three of those Swedes making their way in there. I think there's even a chance Matthias Havlid could work his way kind of to that late first, early second range, although I don't have him there in the mock. 5'9 defensemen don't usually go in the first round, but those Swedes in their gold medal effort, they all help themselves.
And then obviously one of the standout players of that tournament for Team USA was Isaac Howard. I know he's getting overshadowed really in draft talk by having a lot of really good teammates, as tends to happen to program guys. But especially early in that tournament, he was a force. And he was, I don't know that he quite got to Cole Caulfield levels early in the tournament, but there was a couple games where the puck was going in real easy for him. You've got him going at 28 to the Toronto Maple Leafs. We'll see if Toronto holds on to that pick. Obviously, you never know with a team that's trying to do some getting themselves over the hump. But if they do stick, I agree with you, this is exactly what they seem to like to do.
Yeah, and some people might think that Howard could go earlier. I think it's possible he can go earlier. He's a smaller winger who's not an amazing skater. Late first is probably more where he fits, I think. But yeah, I think this is a guy with a ton of skill, hockey sense, scoring ability. So that was why I made that fit. Although, you know, Matthew Nyes wasn't completely like that kind of player, so maybe, you know, they could look at a different kind of player too, but that's just the kind of player I think they usually target.
All right, we're going to kind of wrap a little bit on the World Juniors, circle back on a couple of the D in a second here, but anything else that I didn't bring up from this first round mock that you found really interesting as you were putting it together, or that since you published it, you got a lot of feedback on one way or the other?
Nothing that would be too interesting. I think the Casper one's going to be the most fascinating one going forward. I think him and Gauthier seem to be the kind of the two guys that have kind of risen a little bit in the closing weeks of the draft season, and we'll see where those two ultimately end up on draft day. But I did not get pushback on Casper being at 8. I didn't get that many texts from people saying they don't think he's not going to go there. I did hear that a couple of weeks ago, that when I talked to people around the league, they thought, hey, I think he might go top 10, top 12. They would push back and say, I think that's high. But I think post world, you're starting to hear a little bit more. Okay, I think you're onto something there. So we'll see.
All right. So with the Worlds right now, we obviously talked about the 2D already. What have they shown at this World Championship so far, Nemets and Juracek? I mean, obviously, Nemets, I think, is playing right around 15 a night when I've checked in. Is that about right?
Yeah, maybe a little bit more. I think Nemets has been really impressive because his Olympics wasn't that good. He basically got benched there towards the end, and after kind of having a medium role to start, here I think he's been quite good, building on his strong playoffs from the Slovakia Men's League, showing that he can make plays first at this level. He can play with pace, and he hasn't stood out, been a top defenseman at this level, but he looks like he belongs, which as a U18 player is not easy to do. You know, Juracek to a lesser extent because he's not playing as much, but I still have him in his game. Slavkovsky is leading Slovakia in ice time as we record this. I'm not going to sit here and tell you just because a couple of games is going to flip the dynamic and we're talking about Slavkovsky, you know, going over right or something like that. But I think that it's a razor close decision. I think Montreal's got a real decision to make at 1.
And then it's not just the draft of guys I guess we should cover on when it comes to the Worlds. I mean, there was quite the game-winning goal scored by Luke Hughes the other day, taking it end-to-end for the winner. I mean, what has a guy like him showed you at this tournament?
I mean, he's just been so impressive, and a guy who I think may be giving USA a little bit of a buyer's remorse right now for not bringing him to the Olympics, quite frankly. I think he probably could have helped them there, and just continues to build off a very impressive freshman season in Michigan. And he said he's going back now for a second season, but it's hard to watch him at this level and not think he couldn't help the Devils next season.
He could. I think you're right. I mean, the dynamism in his game really pops. And I'm sure that there's other things that he's going to add with another year in college. And you just get a little extra time. College, I always think of the scheduling advantages of college is that you can really spend more time trying to bulk, I think, than you can get in a lot of other leagues because you don't have games through the middle of the week. So that's, to me, a clear advantage for him of going back to college, but there are certainly things that he could add to an NHL lineup today.
Yep, I agree.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
All right, from the draft board and the future prospects to the guys who have now are NHL players. I think everyone that we're about to talk about, you can officially say is a full-timer. I mean, those would be the Calder Trophy candidates. We've got the finalists now announced: Moritz Seider, Trevor Zegras, Michael Bunting. But Corey, I want to talk to you a little bit about what you think of kind of, first of all, I guess those finalists, and then we can just kind of debate a little bit who we think is going to win this award, who we think deserves to win this award, and the periphery. To me, it was probably about 7 deep, I think, that I seriously considered for my ballot this year.
Yeah, it was a strong rookie class, and I understood why the 3 finalists were the 3 finalists. They were 1, 2, and 4 in scoring respectively in rookies. Seider was 4, but obviously he's a defenseman who played massive minutes and had a huge role for a rookie defenseman in the National Hockey League. I don't think those choices were unreasonable. And I know you can't incorporate the playoffs in this. They ask you to vote before the playoffs start. But the one rookie I've watched in the playoffs, Seth Jarvis, it's hard to watch him at this level and not think he shouldn't have been in those finalists. He looked so good in that first round series versus Boston.
Yeah, he made a big difference. And I think in important moments of that game, you were noticing him. And that was one of the things that – it's one of the things I struggle with in general when you have a rookie field like this, is they're on such different teams and in such different situations. And you just don't know what the differences are when you're judging that key word in the definition, which is proficient in their first year as an NHL player. I think it's hard to measure.
Anton Lundell got zero power play time this year, and he still scored 40 points.
I know, and that is a confounding factor to me in how you put together one of these ballots, because you think, okay, they're in a situation where it's, number one, much tougher to get prime, you know, deployment like the power play for stuff like producing points. But on the other hand, that means that they have so many good players around them that I do think it, you know, maybe they're getting put into situations that are advantageous too in other ways, in terms of their 5-on-5 matchups and in terms of their line mates. And those are all things that make this, to me, one of the hardest awards to really parse through and not make it a prospect ranking, right? Which I think is what gut feeling every year when I go in to set out, you know, who I think at the start of the year is going to win, it basically is a prospect ranking for me.
Sure.
And then the year happens and you have to decide who was the most proficient. So you didn't vote, so you can talk extremely freely on this. I have to be a little careful in what I say here because I did vote. But I'll turn it over to you first. Like, who do you think should win this award? If you had voted, what would your ballot have been?
The word proficient is a weird one in there because I think nobody actually really pays attention to that. I think they just use it as like an MVP on rookie, essentially. Because if you really wanted to get into the proficiency argument, you can start bringing Matt Boldy seriously into the discussion because he didn't play the full season. But if you look at the body of his season compared to the body of the other top rookies, you can say he was very much in that mix. But he didn't play the full season. He didn't have the point totals of Raymond, Zegras, Bunting, so he didn't make it. Of the three finalists, it has to be Sider, I think, just because he was basically the number one defenseman in the National Hockey League as a rookie. And that's such a viable role for a team. I really respect Zegras. I mean, he was the talk of the NHL several times this season. He would have been my number two vote there. And I would think a little bit about it because he did play center this season. Not, you know, he was a top of the lineup center there. But I think Sider's season was just a little bit more impressive in terms of how big a role he put on that Red Wings team, how well he did in that role. But I do think it's close. Bunting is obviously one that inspires debate in terms of the merit that he has for this award. And I've always told people, if you don't like that someone like that is being considered, tell people to change the definition. Because as of right now, he's eligible. And he scored the most points among rookies. So I don't have an issue with him being considered for this award. Although I do think, obviously, context matters. Played a lot with some really, really good players. Can't say when I watched those games, I was as impressed by his play as I was by somebody like a Zegras or Sider. So even though he had the most points, that wouldn't have been my vote.
Where I think Sider and Zegras differentiated themselves was the ways that they elevated at two of the toughest positions on the ice. And you're alluding to this obviously as well, but the center position and the defense position on two teams that were bad. And, you know, I think Zegras, by the end of the year, his line mates were pretty good. But at the start of the year, I don't think anyone would have looked at his situation and said he's being put in a position that is super conducive to being a play driver, a giant producer. I think he initiated a lot of that. I think Sonny Milano was a great compliment to him. And I think Sonny Milano really did a good job this season reestablishing himself. But I think that fit was not an automatic at the start of the year. That wasn't something that we would have looked at and said, well, obviously Zegras is going to succeed. He's playing with Sonny Milano. And that's no disrespect to him. It's just the reality of where Milano had been. And now I think the two of them look like a great 1-2 punch together. And I think for Sider, you know, he had a rotating cast. He started the year with Nick Leddy. He played a lot with Danny DeKeyser, who had some issues throughout the year. And I think both of those two, despite being in, I think, difficult situations for certain parts of the year. You know, I think Anaheim started great, and I don't think that was too big of a problem. But especially as they faded out, that's a tough thing. I think you get into kind of the rookie wall, and it didn't really hit Trevor Zegras, and I think it didn't really hit Morten Seider too much. And that really impressed me in the way that they handled the grinds of two hard seasons, getting opponents' toughest competition, and in Zegras' case, some of the opponents' toughest actions against him. So those two, to me, really elevate themselves. To me, when I look at these are two excellent candidates for this award. Again, I probably can't say who I voted for, but I think those two are to me, a cut above, I would say.
Yeah, I can see reasonable arguments one way or the other. If I remember correctly, I don't think Zegras played center consistently all season. I think there were some times he was on the wing.
I saw him a lot at center. I mean, when I saw him live, certainly it was at center. And I feel like when I watched, I saw him a lot at center. But I'd have to pull up kind of the face-off numbers and see where he clocked in there.
Yeah, I might be wrong. I might be wrong on that before some Ducks fans get angry in my mentions. I might be wrong on that. But like I said, I think he still played plenty of center and did still at a very impressive level. And obviously was highly entertaining to watch on many occasions. And it's going to be both of them are going to be star players in this league for a very long time.
I think it breaks out to about 7.5 faceoffs per game that he took, which would tell you that he played center for probably three quarters of the season, two thirds to three quarters of the season. I think you kind of figure 10 faceoffs a game is what I would consider someone who played center for the whole year.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. All right. In the next tier, I think there's another, you mentioned a couple of them already. I think, you know, Matt Boldy was on my ballot. I thought how good he was in the span of games that he played. Yeah, I think I did dock him a little bit because it wasn't the full season. We didn't get a chance to see how he would handle kind of that rookie wall. And I thought about where guys like Zegras and where Raymond were at the, you know, 40, 45 game marks of their seasons. But he was on my ballot. I thought he was excellent. Lucas Raymond, I think, is in this conversation.
Sure. He was third in scoring. He was one. Only.
He was third in scoring. Absolutely. And he's another one where this is one of the more interesting things to me is these three guys, Bunting, Boldy and Raymond, all I think played with really good line mates. And that was one thing that, you know, I try to not play the what if game when you're building a ballot. You try to not play the, well, how would these guys have done in someone else's situation? You try to only assess them based on situations they were in. And I think all of them did really important things for the line. I think, you know, Boldy bringing out, you know, a lot of offense in Kevin Fiala, who's a great player in his own right. But I think he even saw it elevate once Boldy was in full swing. Bunting, I think, did a lot of. I know he played with Austin Matthews and Mitch Marner, and Austin Matthews very well may win the MVP this year. And both of those guys had great seasons. When I saw Bunting, he was doing a lot of the dirty work, and
He's a good player. He competes hard. He has good skill and hockey sense in his own right. Just not an amazing. Never been an amazing skater, so I don't think he drives a line. But he's a really good player. And obviously, Toronto did a great job in acquiring him and giving some depth to that organization.
Yeah, and that's where, to me, the it's not a prospect ranking thing that I always have to remind myself of that, is that do I think Michael Bunting is going to end up better than either Lucas Raymond or Matt Boldy? No, I do not. But I think this year he played a really important role for a really good team, and that matters. And I think he's got all the statistical numbers to say that he did exactly that. And then you got Lucas Raymond, who played with two guys in Dylan Larkin and Tyler Bertuzzi for a lot of the year, who both had basically career years. And I think he was a big reason why for that. I think he brought a level of electricity to that line. He brought some finish. He brought some playmaking. I thought he was an outstanding player.
And like Jarvis, he's a teenager.
Right. And that's where it gets tough. Is it who had the most impressive year given the circumstances, or who in this one year was the most kind of proficient? And, you know, the award definition is one thing, but we know sometimes that's not the way the voting works out. And it's one of the toughest things to wrestle with.
Yeah, and I think there's a lot of typically fan outrage when I think you almost kind of go into almost like a judicial mindset of what's the letter of the award versus the spirit of the award. Is this, I know it says most proficient rookie, but isn't like the spirit of the award something that's meant to recognize somebody who's going to be a star in this league and an important player in this league for a very long time? I think some would argue that, and some would say, well, if that's what they want, they should put
that in the definition. Yes, that's to be honest, that's the way I look at it. I do exactly what they tell me to do. What do you want me to vote on? Okay, here's what I'll vote on, you know?
Yeah, and I think it's reasonable.
So it, tough call. The other guy I wanted to give a mention to, and you mentioned Lindell, so I unless you want to say anything else there, we'll have that be his mention. Jeremy Swayman, he's not on my ballot, but I thought he was excellent. And I think, you know, even in the playoff series, you saw that. He's obviously the goalie on my rookie team. In another year, I think he would have been on my ballot. It was just a really deep class.
Yeah, I mean, he was – I know they split the starts there, so that probably hurts his case because he didn't get the full amount of value from playing a 60-game season because he split it with Linus Allmark. But just how he was in the previous season when he didn't get enough games to be Calder eligible, very impressive in this season. And for a mid-round pick, not the biggest goalie, he's found ways to succeed in college at a very high level. He's found ways to succeed as a pro at a very high level. Looks like he'll be like an excellent player for Boston for a long time.
All right, so there's kind of our who should segment here. Now we can kind of get into the how well do we know our colleagues portion of the episode, and let's do some predictions here. So we know who the top three are in some order. How do you think this is going to shake out?
Even though I think, like I said, I think there's two good candidates, as we said. I think it's Zegras and Seider will be 1-2 in some order. And though I would lean towards Seider, I think at the end of the day it will be Zegras.
I say that
because of not just because he had the higher point totals, and I think these awards tend to typically go by point totals if you just look at history. But I just think that Zegras, with the average voter, probably resonated more just because of the highlight reel assist and goal moments, because of just how we kind of transcended the sport sometimes throughout the season. I think that will play more with the average voter who just maybe doesn't watch Seider play every night.
I will say it does tend to be a forwards award. Like, above all, forwards tend to win this award. I think Seider's going to win. I think my gut feel, and I try to not talk to people about their ballot too much during the year. I did one kind of informal poll at the midpoint where Zegras and Seider were a dead heat. I think Seider's going to win. That's just my gut feel.
Do you feel like you might be in a bubble, though? Not just because you work in Detroit, but not just because you're in Detroit, but because I think, you know, you're younger. You probably talk to people who, you know, are big hockey nerds like yourself, who watch a bunch of games, who look at the numbers. That voting pool is huge. There's a lot of people who vote on that you've never talked to before in your life. And I just think just how the average person is going to think. That's what I think it'll happen. And then it'll gravitate towards Zegras. But I think the vote will be close.
There is no question. You're spot on about that. In fact, I would say 80% of the voters that I talk to are not just my age or, you know, they're my coworkers, right? So it's like, I think we at The Athletic, we can be guilty of having a little bit of a hive mind sometimes. So yes, I think that the bubble effect is very real. So that it's very possible. And I don't know a lot of the especially like there's kind of the broader pools that aren't team beat writers. Like they kind of section it out. And I don't know a lot of those people very well. So that's very possible. But that's just been my gut feel. I think Greg Wyshynski does like kind of informal polls pretty regularly, right? From ESPN.
Yeah.
And I think he's had Seider in the one spot for the last couple of those that he did. But again, maybe just similar sampling thing, right? So.
Right. And we'll see. I think it'll be close. I wouldn't be surprised if it's like a 55-45% type of thing.
And what I always try to squeeze into these conversations, because I've had to have them a lot this year, don't let your fandom take away from the fact that these are all really, really good players. Try to not get into the habit of you know, dragging one of these other guys because your guy didn't win, even if it felt like they deserved it. These are all outstanding rookies that are going to, you know, in a lot of ways, define the next generation of the NHL.
I think that's a reasonable point.
When you're hiring for your small business, you want to find quality professionals that are right for the role. That's why you have to check out LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn Jobs has the tools to help find the right professionals for your team faster and for free. When you're trying to grow a business, the caliber of person you bring in to help you do that is really important. And LinkedIn makes it really easy to interview the right people for the role, quality people. LinkedIn isn't just a job board. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. On LinkedIn, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Hire professionals like a professional on LinkedIn. 2.5 million small businesses use LinkedIn for hiring. Post your job for free at linkedin.com/NHL show. That's linkedin.com/NHL show to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's the little birdie? Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
All right, on to the mailbag, and it's some really good mailbag ones this week, actually. Starting with JP Claremont, who wants to ask about Luca Caputi's comments, and that's the head coach of Kingston, about Shane Wright's situation this season, how it affects the context of his performance, and he says shows outstanding leadership. Is it enough to justify solidify a first overall selection? For those who don't know the quote, Caputi was basically talking about how Wright spent a lot of the, especially the early part of the year, playing with young players. Because of how young the OHL was, and how, you know, Wright's young in terms of, like, there wasn't an OHL season. So guys who would have been first-year players this year are first-year players. First-year players last year are first-year players this year. And they didn't have the experience in the league. The context of that and how it affects, you know, how we may look at Shane Wright's stat line. Is that a fair characterization for the quote?
Yeah, and he talked a little bit more about how he was focusing on his defensive play a lot and stuff like that. And I get it. I'm sure there's some merit to it. And I've heard these lines from coaches or advocates from teams for their own players before. And it kind of sounds like an excuse to me personally. And I still have Shane Wright number one on my list. I think he's an excellent, excellent prospect. I'm a big believer in the player. But I think you can be a big believer in the player and still called this year what it was. He massively underperformed what you thought he was going to do. After what he did as a 15-year-old, that's what he did at the U18 Worlds. I thought you were thinking 40, 50 goals, here we come, 100, 120 points. I mean, he's going to light it up this year, and he didn't. And I don't think you need to make excuses for it. It's just a reality of what happened. I think you got to take that information, balance it over what you've seen this season versus what you've seen other seasons, and make a decision on that. But I think, you know, I mean, I'm sure Logan Cooley at some point wasn't always playing with the best players this season. And all over history, I'm sure that, you know, Yuri Slavkovsky's coach wanted him to focus on his defense more and playing versus men. I just don't buy that as a legitimate one. What about you?
Well, first of all, I'll say the second part of his question about Wright's leadership, that's never been a question, right? That's one of the selling points from start to finish. We had him on this show at the start of the season, and he blew us both away with his maturity and his polish. So I don't think that's really ever been a huge question with Shane Wright. What I wondered when I saw this was, who is this quote for? Because NHL teams are making this calculation independently. They know who the first year and experienced players are, and they're already factoring in this context as they're assessing him, right? So who is this quote for? I think it's for us. I think it's for media or fans, and maybe that the coach perceives aren't giving his guy his due, even while ranking him most places still number one. I think it's for us, but it doesn't make sense that it'd be for NHL teams, does it? He'd either tell them this in private or just assume that they are already factoring this in.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. But like I said, I don't think it's a highly persuasive argument, but I get coach has to go to bat for his guy.
Yeah, and I think that's ultimately what it is he wants to stick up for his player. You know, as a fan or as a reporter, you kind of do with that what you will. To your point, like, you had him ranked number one already. So it's not like anyone was saying this proved he's not a good player. But I don't think it's unfair to say, hey, there's a certain, you know, barometer for what we see number one picks produce, and you wanted to see it from Shane Wright. If he didn't, you'll make your calculation as to why.
Yeah, and you can, like I said, there's reasonable, like, he still had a great year. Top 10 OHL scoring this year. He didn't have a bad year, but it wasn't an amazing year for number one pick. His playoffs were not that strong. It's just a reality. Doesn't mean he won't be a great NHL player for a long time. It's just got to call it like you see it.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Eric Jeske is curious about, this is a great question, how published draft boards change near the draft itself. Seems like every year players will rise or fall significantly days before they're picked. Do teams leak it when they're higher on a guy than the public? What changes well after games are done? I just wanted to say this, what this reminded me of is a couple years ago, Jake Sanderson, because it was during the COVID draft year where the draft was so late, and Jake Sanderson, it seemed like, kept rising up boards. And I think with hindsight, we see that was absolutely the right thing. He went where he deserved to go on talent. But people were mystified as to how this could be happening because there hadn't been any games played in months and Jake Sanderson just kept climbing. And I think it's a great question by Eric. What do you think?
I think that's just when people like me start publishing things and
– yeah.
I'll start getting feedback from around the league. Like, hey, people who are my friends who would want to help me out on these kind of things. Cause sometimes people will maybe try to send you things that are not as helpful. They'll want you pumping their guy or something like that. But the people who I consider friends who would want to help me out will send me texts like, hey, just letting you know, you can have your own opinion, but this guy's going higher than you have him in this mock draft. Like, he's going to go here. That guy's going to go lower. Just from what I'm hearing, from where we are on these guys, and that's usually how that process goes. And some teams don't formulate those opinions until the very end. Some teams will have their final meetings now over the next couple of weeks, and some teams wait until about a week or two before the draft to put their list together and kind of again start doing their own internal mock drafts and saying, okay, who are we going to get, kind of thing. So I understand. And there are sometimes some late games too. Like, we have a really late World Championship. The CHL playoffs is going to go run really late. So those things could tweak things a little bit. But it's usually just sometimes someone like me could be just behind the industry a little bit in terms of, hey, this guy rose, this guy fell towards the end, and I didn't catch that.
Yeah, it's there's just kind of a lag of information, right? Where, like, let's say, so this most recent list that you put out basically coincides with the ends of 85 to 90% of guys' seasons. It's really just the CHL playoff players who are still going at this point.
Yeah.
And the Worlds guys. You put out your last list. There's not going to really be meaningful hockey played between now and your next list. But you have another list yet to come out. And we don't expect there to be seismic movement from any of the big guys. But there will be feedback that you got on this list that came out last week that bumps a guy, you know, potentially, what, 10 to 15 spots in the mid rounds, or just a couple spots in the upper bounds, just based on, hey, I'm hearing this guy or our guys like this guy more than you have him or something.
Right. My final list is going to come out the week of the combine. So, and I'm going to have to probably tweak it after the combine. There's probably going to be some things I heard from the interviews that might tweak things a little bit. Maybe a guy shoots up 2 inches that he didn't realize was that big or something like that. So there could be little things like that could change it too. But yeah, it's usually just a lag of information. Like, even today while making calls, some people will tell you, hey, I think this guy's going like top 10 or top 12. And like, I'm like, really? I wouldn't have expected that one. And just one example, you would want to verify that. But just, yeah, there's a lot of chatter, rumor mongering around this time of year. And that kind of leads, like I said, hopefully you try to catch up to that lag. And Sanderson, I think, is just a little bit of underrated the player too. But yeah, there was a little bit of a just everybody keeps telling me, hey, this guy's going top five. So you keep going back and rewatching him. You're like, oh, okay, I see what's going on here, kind of thing.
And that rewatching, I think, is the key here. It's not like everyone's putting out lists and then NHL scouts are calling in, you know, hand checking everyone, and we're just okay. Here, we'll do exactly what you say or whatever. Usually, when someone tells you, I think you're wrong about this, it's really that you then go back and say, well, let me look for this thing that they're telling me. They're telling me I underrated his skating. They're telling me that he has better sense than I'm giving him credit for, that he's more competitive than I'm giving him credit for. And you almost go and you look to say, can I verify that? Is that fair characterization?
Yeah. Like, and I don't always change my opinion. Sometimes I do, sometimes I don't. And I know some people who are both either, who are either scouts or readers sometimes get upset when I change my opinion. And there hasn't been games played. And I think, well, are you like being influenced by groupthink? Are you being influenced by other people, even though it's not your opinion? Those are all reasonable arguments, but it's kind of part of the chaos of putting a draft list together.
Yeah, absolutely. Really good question by Eric. Next one's from Adam in San Francisco. He says, if Luke Hughes, or SF, I guess I shouldn't say, it could be Santa Fe, something else. If Luke Hughes was born a week later than his September 9, 2003 birthday, he'd be in the 2022 NHL draft. Where would he rank in the 2022 draft based on where he was projected during in his draft year? And how would his ranking have changed based on his D plus 1 year? So I think he's saying, like, if last year's Luke Hughes profile was in this draft, where would he rank? And then given that he's the young birthday, where would he just rank straight up now if he was born a week later?
Yeah, I still think he'd kind of go between that 4 to 6 range if last year's one was in this year's draft. Based on how well he's played at college and in the world, like I kind of have those two tiers in my rankings. I have the Wright-Slavkovsky tier, and I have the tier with Cooley, Yerichek, and Nemich. Last year's version would be in that second tier with Cooley, Yerichek, and Nemich. And this year's one, I think, would be in that top tier with Wright and Slavkovsky. I think ultimately he would still be number 3 of those guys, but he would be in that group, and I could buy reasonable arguments for him against either of those two.
So a separation from the other defensemen, though, if he were in this draft class.
Yeah, just because his just 6'2", the skating so dynamic, he creates offense, he's doing it at this level. He's basically the same age as David Yerichek.
Yes, that's right. And Owen Power, he's almost a full year younger than Owen Power. And they were in the same draft class. So another good question there. Next one is from Mike, who wants to talk about the Devils. Is one of the D potentially in play at 2 for them, Nemitz or Yerichek? We already talked about, what is the differential between the 2D and Slavkovsky and Cooley? How close is it? So you kind of talked about just a second ago there, how you have these guys tiered. In theory, the Devils would take whoever is left in that top tier from Wright and Slavkovsky. But I like this question. I mean, the Devils, could they go for the D if they really love Nemitz or Yurich? I mean, obviously, if they love them enough, you do it. But what would your opinion on that be?
I think it's even though there's a tier, I don't think it's the typical tier differential you see at the top, where there's between 1 to 2 to 3 to 4 is usually quite significant. I don't think there's between 2, which is my firm, as at the moment, Slavkovsky, to Yurich or Nemitz is that significant. I don't think it's unreasonable to pick Yerichek or Nemich. And when talking to people around the league, the Devils are the one team that always comes to mind for people of, if someone was going to take a D in that top three range, that's not, and if one of them can't get to Seattle or Philly, the Devils are the common team that's nominated for that because they have such a good young forward group with Jack Hughes, Nico Hischier. You got Alex Holtz coming. Dawson Mercer looked really impressive this season. And while they have Luke Hughes coming, and they just signed Dougie Hamilton to that big deal, and I think Ty Smith didn't have the best year, but I think he'll bounce back. I think you look at that team and you think they need another big young defenseman. Not big as an actual big, but big time talent.
So well, but I think also that, big as an actual big. I don't think that's unfair to say.
No, but I meant that they need another good, really good young defenseman in their organization. They're the team that's commonly nominated. Would I actually do it? I want to see how the rest of the World Championships play out before I say that. Right now, I probably lean to no, but I don't think the talent gap is that significant to take someone like Yerichek over Slavkovsky, for example.
Let me say this. If they were doing a D, you would think Yerichek would be the guy who would fit their, not I don't want to call it a need, fit what they could use more because they already have like Luke Hughes and even Dougie Hamilton as kind of power play runners. Juracek, you want playing on the power.
And Ty Smith too.
And Ty Smith, right. Like, but Juracek, I think, could play a shooting spot on a power play without having to kind of quarterback it. I would think Juracek would make more sense.
And take harder defensive minutes because like Dougie's not a great defender. Ty's not a great defender. Luke will defend fine, I think, but I don't think that's his bread and butter in the NHL. Juracek is the big, physical, hard minutes guy that I think would make a lot of sense.
Yeah, you could play Juracek with either Hughes or Smith, and that would be really complimentary at 5-on-5, and he could kind of play a role there that would help either of those two guys.
Yep, I agree.
Yep. All right, next one is from Patrick McConnell. How would you compare Joachim Kemmel and his shooting ability to past top 10 picks like Dylan Genther and Alexander Holtz? I love this question because Holtz is one of the first guys that comes to my mind when I watch Kemmel.
Yeah, I think there's some small differences. I think Kemmel's a better skater than Holtz and a little harder, a little bit more competitive. Whereas I think Holtz's shooting ability and his pure skill was a little bit better than Kemmel's. I like the one to Genther. I would still take Genther because there's some similarities in the way they play, but Genther's bigger and has been, mind you, really, really good the second half and in the WHL playoffs. I think he scored in every WHL playoff game so far. But I think that one's closer, but even though I think Genther's a slightly bit better version of that.
All right. I like that. But I think he is onto something. I think there is, you know, the power scoring winger here is real. Sir Adam Marbrand says, what percent of NHL? I don't know if I said that right. Is that right?
I don't know, but we'll call him Sir from that one.
All right. I think he's knighted. What percentage of NHL teams do you believe currently have Shane Wright at number one on their draft board? That's a good one, too. Over under is 66%.
Maybe slightly under.
Okay. So there's a decent chunk.
Yeah, I would say slightly under. But it might be – it's that's close to a push, to be quite honest. I think there's a sizable chunk that wouldn't take him at one. But it's not like there's 30% want Cooley, 30% want Slavkovsky, 30% want him, 10% want somebody else, something like that. It's not at that point.
All right. Alex Y, could you give your thoughts on the state of the Red Wings prospect pool? In his opinion, Edvinson, Berggren are likely NHLers next year. What do you think are the chances that one of Willander, Johansson, or Soderblom make the NHL next year? That's a lot of rookies, so.
Yeah, well, we don't talk enough about the Red Wings on this podcast.
No,
so
not
it's,
nearly.
I think he's on to something. I think even though Edvinson will only be 19 next season, I think he has a very good chance to make that team. Berggren, good chance. I don't think he's a lock, though.
I don't think he's a lock, no.
But he was the leading scorer in Grand Rapids. He's had a couple of consecutive pretty good years as a pro. So I think he's absolutely in the mix. In terms of those other ones, Wallander, Johansson, Soderblom, I'd like to see Johansson play in the American League another year, even though he was very good. He's been very good in Far East the last couple of years. You know, if it's him versus McIsaac or something like that, I don't think he's like a lock to make it out of camp or anything along those lines. Soderblom is the interesting one. He's the one that I can kind of see. I would lean to giving him some American League time, see how he does in North America first with those feet, but he was really impressive in the SHL this season, so I could buy it.
The thing with Soderblom is he has the NHL body already, and that's something that I would say Johansson in particular could benefit. Wallander, I think, is staying in Sweden. Like, I don't even think that's really a conversation at this point. Yeah. But Johansson, I think, can benefit from the extra strength time. We're going to see how that goes, and I agree with you. I'd like to see him running power play one in Grand Rapids. The thing that Soderblom has is the NHL body. And what I think he needs the AHL time for as much as the feet is just the style of play and how much more physical the American League and the NHL are going to be than the SHL was. And just getting used to that, getting used to how guys are going to play him. But I do think he has the skill, the shot, and the physical, you know, ability to maybe hang better than those other guys right off the bat. Although I think Johansson's skating is a really good weapon there. Circle back on Berggren, though, because I agree with you. I think he's done enough to say he deserves a look, but we just haven't seen the Red Wings clear paths for their prospects. Lucas Raymond was not, you know, cleared a path really to make the NHL. I think they probably expected him to play in the American League this year, and then Vrana got hurt and he got some minutes next to Larkin and Bertuzzi, and he just forced their hand. Each of the last 3 years under Yzerman, Zadina started his draft plus two season in the American League. Michael Rasmussen started in the American League as recently as last year. Joe Valeno started in the American League this year. All those guys ended up playing the vast majority of the season in the NHL. That's what I think is going to happen for Berger. I think he'll play most of the season in the NHL. But it would not shock me to see them start him in GR and he just doesn't get the call up until, you know, somebody goes down.
Yep. Yeah, that sounds reasonable.
Yep. All right. Next one would be Kyle B. What would have to happen for Savoy to fall to 9 to the Sabres to snag him up like you have in your mock? Is it solely based on size? So obviously what would have to happen is exactly pretty much what did happen in your mock, is a bunch of other teams take one guy in front of him. Why do you think that it's reasonable enough to mock it that way?
There's a couple of factors. There's the player himself, where 5'9", as I mentioned, the size, don't think he's the most dynamic 5'9 guy you're seeing. He doesn't pop off the page like Cooley does, for example, even though he is very talented, great skater, great hockey sense, he can shoot it, all those things. People think he's probably a winger in the NHL, and then you kind of have this counterbalance of guys like Cutter Gauthier are moving up, guys like Marco Kasper are moving up. Not everyone believes Kasper will go top 10, so that might be the one I might be off on if I was to get that part of it wrong, that Savoy can go over Kasper. I don't think Savoy goes over Cutter Gauthier, just from what, everything I'm hearing right now. But that would be the one that I might be wrong on. And if maybe someone does believe he's a center, they truly believe it, this is the next Brayden Point. Maybe they do take him that high. But those would be the variables that I think would play into him going lower in the draft. And I didn't get a lot of pushback on that. I got some pushback, but not a lot of pushback on that one.
Do you have a feel for, I mean, to kind of go back to the question a couple ago with the percentages, do you have a feel for like a fraction of the NHL that thinks he's a center versus a wing, or at least of the ones that you talk to?
It's a small percentage.
Yeah. So the majority opinion, the strong majority opinion would be that he ends up on the wing in the NHL.
Yes.
All right. All right. Well, that will do it for the mailbag today, and that is going to do it for us overall. Thanks for listening to this episode of the Athletic Hockey Show's Prospect Series. You can subscribe to the Athletic Audio Plus on Apple Podcasts to get all the bonus content from our entire network. It's going to start you with a 30-day free trial, and then it's just 99 cents a month after that. Right now, you can subscribe to The Athletic for $1 a month for 6 months when you visit theathletic.com/hockeyshow. Do that. Read all of the draft coverage from Corey and Scott Wheeler and our entire network. We'll talk to you soon.